Welcome, Jim, and welcome Fabio and Buddy.
Thank you.
Hello.
Hi.
I think we're pretty chuffed. It's very, very cool to have the two of you here in this magnificent studio here in the city of Melbourne.
Yay!
Now, we're going to share some stories, peel back the layers. We're going to drop the facade, just let go and hear all about what you two have been up to. And I'm going to share some experiences that I've had with the two of you recently over the last few weeks around voice.
Am I going to cry?
I am going to cry. So welcome. Thanks for turning up, guys.
Thanks for having us.
It's a real pleasure to have you here. I'd love for you to introduce the gentleman, because we've just met and I feel like we haven't really met.
Fabio and Buddy are two of the most exceptional human beings I've met like recently. And man, they've absolutely like blown me away. I know I'm taking the piss here, but I'm actually really serious. Can we be serious?
Can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Words won't do justice the experience that they've created for me and a few others in this magnificent work called Fitzmaurice Voice. But I don't know how else to introduce them, Jim, other than...
Give me some context. How did you meet them? Give me some context.
Well, take us on the journey.
Wow, okay, all right. So I was doing some work with Emma at the Melbourne Actors Guild, and she said, you've got to do this workshop with Fabio and Buddy called Fitzmaurice Voice. She goes, it's going to be so transformative. And I went, wow, that sounds pretty cool. But then we spent the next 2 weeks just going on this amazing journey.
But before that, you've got the moment of like, you've been given the offer.
Yes.
And they said, yes, I'm going to do it. And then you contacted Fabio.
I had a chat to Fabio.
And then Fabio told you, you have to do the mask work as well. It's part of it.
And I thought, what the fuck is the mask work?
Yeah, exactly.
Come on, how do I do this? And I'm not a theatre person. I'm going to look like a complete idiot.
Yeah, exactly.
Take us through that journey. Did you resist the offer? Was there any resistance?
No, Jim. It was just something that the way Emma told, there was an energy and a resonance with Emma who said, you've got to do this workshop. And I said, okay, I'm going to do it. I got no idea what it is, but I'm just going to do it literally. So yeah, that's kind of.
So
weird.
Then Fabio told you that there was mask work, and Fabio, what did you say? Because Fabio gave me the brief. Because like when he's like, okay, these are the people that are going to be here, and Damien, this is Damien's dossier, and what he said was that he told you that you had to do the mask work because it was I'm a huge dyslexic, so when I get to these like multisyllabic words, I get integral to the
we'll
work.
We'll make a little song out of it.
I'm integral.
I love how you can actually pronounce multisyllabic really well.
Because that's probably the only word that I've been practicing.
Wonderful.
Oh, did I mention that I have a PhD?
Yeah.
How'd you get yours?
I got it, baby. You were there when the big epiphany happened. And that was the linchpin. So, yes.
Oh, congrats.
Thank you. You can call me Dr. B now.
Dr. B. Dr. B.
Yes.
Tell us now, you're going through the dossier.
So, I was going through the dossier.
Yes.
And then Fabio said what?
I said, Damien's great.
Yes.
He's very interested in the voice work because, but I told him that he also has to do the mask work.
Yes.
And he said, sure, I'm in.
And so then I was like, well, yeah, because this is the funny thing is because it's such an integral part of what we do and it's an embodied practice that the way that Fabio and I met is probably also really important too.
Please.
Because when I was working at the VCA, the Victorian College of the Arts at the University of Melbourne, I was the head of acting there for 6 years. And I got this email from Fabio. And he's like, I'm in the process of getting my Fitzmaurice voice work certification and I need a mentor. I was wondering if you'd want to be my mentor. And I was like, huh. So I looked up his dossier and it was like, oh, clown, oh, mask work, oh, huh? In Melbourne, he's like, he does exactly the same thing that I do. And he's now going on the Fitzmaurice journey. Okay, cool. That's awesome. And then we just realized that like we were like two kindred souls that needed to keep working together.
How amazing.
And so there's this like technique of and I think this is something that you two do as well, and that you'll jump on board with this, is this, the co-teaching model of like where you, when you have two teachers in the space, there's this beautiful synergy that happens with people in growth and development and transformation. Because what happens is that, you know, what I say may resonate with one person or two people, but what Fabio says may resonate with people that I didn't resonate with. Right. So then there's this, so then it becomes this like communal dialogue where everyone's allowed to actually really be who they are and not fall on board.
Especially when the two teachers are willing students themselves.
Yeah, 100%.
It's really wonderful.
100%. Yeah. I mean, like, it's, but this is the thing. Like, it's the guru in you that is being awakened, because it's not like I'm saying anything that you don't already have resonating inside of you. So it's like, I'm not, you know, I don't develop lambs. I awaken the lion.
The lion.
I awaken the lion. Yes. Yes.
So Damien, you then got a call. You
got the call.
You got the call. Right? Tell us about that.
Look, I got the call and then I turned up and I'd like to think I'm pretty open, maybe.
You're very open.
Okay, yeah. So I turn up, open attitude, and I've turned up and I see Fabio and Moody and I think it was Connor sitting there having dinner, and I thought, fuck that, I'm just going to go in there, big handshake and embrace, and just this amazing energy in the room, and I thought, this is going to be so cool.
Yeah.
This is going to be so cool. And then we went through these sessions, and I'll give a few of the details away as this conversation unfolds. But that first night, I walked out there and I thought, what the fuck? Have I dropped some mushrooms? Have I seriously, like, it was like an exorcism coming out the other side. I know it was crazy, but it was just the biggest release of tension, of stress and delayering. And I just thought, what's this voice that I've got now? This beautiful rich voice. And I wake up the next day just like almost like viscerally transformed from the inside. And
you were viscerally transformed.
Yeah, no, I was absolutely. And I've been a student of change. I've been a student of transformation, and I've never been on such a beautiful transformative journey with, I guess, the lens of voice as a lens, but it was a complete bodily transformation. So that's why I was just on cloud nine and I still am.
But you got to experience the cause and effect that happens. So it's like, as the body begins to open up, the voice responds to exactly what's happening with the body. Mm. And so with the releasing that was coming up for you and the body understanding that it really likes to be in that open place, as opposed to the held, constricted, habitual tension that we carry throughout the day that we learn culturally, you know.
Tell me about that. How do you arrive at that? How do you make that part of your curriculum, part of your vocation? Like, how did you arrive at that?
Well, it's the work of Catherine Fitzmaurice. Mm-hmm. So Catherine Fitzmaurice is a very renowned international voice teacher, and she studied at Central School of Speech and Drama with Cicely Berry and lots of the other world-renowned teachers. And what's really unique about the work is that Catherine combined traditional voice training with Eastern philosophies, like energy work, particularly bioenergetics, Reiki, Shiatsu, yoga. So basically what the work entails is it's two main components. One is destructuring and the other one is restructuring. And destructuring does exactly that, removes the structure. So we've learned habitual ways of holding breath, holding.
I would say that it awakens the structure as opposed to removes the structure. Like it kind of releases the tension that we identify as structure.
Yeah, it gives it permission to be there.
Yeah.
And then we give it permission to breathe into that and softly build a relationship with it, really, because it's not about going, oh, my body's obviously holding in that pattern because it's trying to protect itself. And we don't want to build a negative relationship with that tension. We just want to be aware of it. And the work is really embedded in that deep sense of awareness. Mm-hmm. I'm aware that I'm holding in my chest right now. Can I allow myself to soften? Can I allow the breath to move there? Can I make some sounds? What sounds want to come out? If the tension were to sing, if the tension were to speak, can we just give it the awareness that it needs? so that it can move. And then once it starts to move, there's a new breath, there's a new moment, there's a new opportunity, and something starts to shift and change. So we're constantly changing within the work of destructuring.
And a new version of you begins to emerge, I imagine.
Well, yeah, Well, a version, a deeper version of you, or just a different version of yourself. Mm. Because, yeah, who we are, as Buddha, as we say in satsang, who we are and who we think we are separate.
Who we think we are doesn't exist. Mm. However, what we are. It's not separate from who we think we are.
There we go.
Wow. Okay. Wow. I imagine it requires a willing student.
Well, I think anything requires a willing student. Like, I think, but you have to understand what a willing student is, and our relationship to that is you walk through the door, you're willing. Mm.
Yeah,
that's it.
You arrive.
It takes you how much to get to the space and open a door and walk in the door, and like you're in the room, you're willing. And it's, and the key is that we meet you from where you are. So there's not an end result. There's only a reflection of what's happening in the moment. So it's not prescriptive, it's descriptive. So you describe what's happening in this moment, mm-hmm. as opposed to you want to make a particular quality in the sound, and that needs to be what the others that are doing next to you. Everyone's body is different.
Yeah, so you're not comparing.
No, and you're kind of forced to be with that because it's your body. Mm. We are facilitating a dynamic effort, an opportunity for you to explore something. You're doing the work. Mm. We're encouraging. We might poke around some ribs.
Yeah.
We might give you permission to just be more aware, but you're actually doing the work.
I love that. Marita Davies, who we spoke to in our last episode, she's a colleague of mine, a friend, and we were talking about her experience doing clown school in Paris.
In France.
Remarkable in France.
Yeah. Wow, who does she train with in Paris?
Who's the big guy?
Philippe Goulier.
Yeah, that was him.
Ah, he's my teacher.
Fabio's teacher.
Yeah. By the way, small world.
She said that we were just reflecting on that, and you can listen to the episode. She was reflecting. She said some people turn up to things like that and they treat it like it's an insult to who they are. They have this barrier up, right? And they feel almost insulted by it. And that made sense to me. That really made sense to me that because I've seen it in various platforms when people are challenged, when people are even just ask simple question like, why? you could see that insult manifest itself by people putting their guard up, you know. And I thought it was a really eloquent way of putting it, actually.
I think it's I would add on to that and say that people don't take it as an insult. They take it as an assault because it's it's addressing a pattern of holding that you identify with yourself. Mm. So if I'm a young boy and I am taught that I've got to put my chest up and pull my shoulders back and talk in a certain way in order for my friends to like me and love me, for the girls to like me and love me, for teachers to recognize me. And so then I end up holding that body for how long? 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. And then you get into the work with Fabio and I, and we address that area by offering a different direction that the muscle can go into.
Yeah.
And so then there's an assault on the habit.
You're absolutely right. It's learned behavior, like you said it earlier.
Mm.
It's all these behaviors and habits that we've just learned and we're holding in our bodies.
And the key is the awareness. That's the thing that's so exciting about it, because it's not like, oh no, you're tight, you're ruined. Oh no, you've opened up, you're ruined.
That's
like
right.
One of my favorite bastardizations of a Rumi quote is, when you wake up from having slept, don't be angry with yourself for having slept. Mm. Right? So when you wake up, don't be angry with yourself for having slept. Mm. It's like, it's just a part of the process of growing up and human development. And it's experience is experience. It's neither good nor bad. It's just experience. A lung expands, it contracts. The heart expands, it contracts. The body expands and it contracts. You have to balance yourself out. There's four constants that we're always dealing with as human beings on this planet, and that's weight and gravity. Gravity's always pulling at you weight, and gravity's going to win one day, right? Mm-hmm. And bone and muscle. Bone supports the weight and muscle moves the bone. If the muscle's holding you up, if the muscle's trying to support the weight, you're falling off balance. And when you fall off balance, then the respiratory system responds in a different way, your organs respond in a different way. And so as you're moving through negotiating those three things, just by breathing, just by breathing, you fall out of balance because gravity is going to pull at your organs in a different way because they're moving around. They're going to pull at your ribs in a different way. This is how life is.
Yeah.
So if we get into this place of like being in balance means that it's actually a dance, like Lord Shiva who dances the universe, then we can actually have fun with, oh, well, I was really tight there, as opposed to I was really tight there. I'm a horrible human being. It's never going to be right. I'm never going to be in balance.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a beautiful way to put it, Buddy. And, you know, Jim, there was this whole embodied experience. It was like we started with a beautiful, you know, quiet, silent meditation. Sorry, we started with satsang, which is this beautiful dialogue, you know, how are you, and this really human connection. And then we just got into this simple meditation, and then we got into the stretch and the groan and the growl, and the body just slowly started to wake up. And it's almost this power just comes up through you. And you're going, whoa, where's this coming from? And it was such a beautiful, visceral experience. And then I started to, you know, and I remember you saying to me, Fabio, you know, geez, man, how much tension have I let go of? And Fabio goes to me, that's good. Tension was the right thing for you. It was like the lens into that process. So you accept the tension. The tension's just the way through, and it's not bad. And I love the way we embodied and integrated all of that within us. Like, we didn't make it bad. We just said, that's good. You know, own the tension, you know, celebrate the tension.
Well, it's there for a reason. It's there because it wants attention, perhaps.
Yeah, exactly.
The tension wants attention.
Exactly.
And if we give it to the tension, and we allow the breath, and that's the thing. I think it's all, what Catherine's work is really wonderful is because it focuses so much on breath. And breath is the vehicle for experience. So if we give ourselves permission to breathe, we give ourselves permission to take in present information. Mm. So we're going to be present. If we hold our breath, we're no longer present. We're somewhere else. We're either in the future or the past. Mm. But also the breath allows for us to feel. And that's what I think is really scary for a lot of people, is just if they breathe, they're also going to be able to feel. Yeah. And so the tension is really there as a teacher to kind of remind us to give it the attention that it needs, allow the breath to move there so that something else can shift and change. And as Buddy said before, if your body's going to be held up like this, what else is available to you? What happens if we let go of that pattern? What remains? What's left there? So we learn more about ourselves, and also the work literally warms us up because we're tremoring. My bottle was just tremoring there.
You tremor, you change. I think the other thing is what I love about what you just said, Fabio, is you can literally decipher what Fabio said from the physical realm and not an esoteric place. When he says that when you're holding your breath and not breathing, you're in the past or the future. So let's go into what that would literally mean. If I'm holding my breath, that means I'm holding my breath that's attached to a tension that I believe to be myself from that past life that I had, or that I might be changing into something different, so I'm gonna hold my breath, as opposed to breathing right now in this room with these three handsome, very handsome men, I might say. All I gotta say is y'all don't know my view. I got some hotties in here. Okay. and then look, then things change. You're here, you're in the room, right? So it's a literal thing. So oftentimes what happens is when we go into these kinds of spaces that people get these images for an intention, and then they'll fall into this like, okay, it's like a yoga woo-woo thing. No, it's actually literal. Check it out. What does that mean for you? What do we actually say? What are we saying here about what is the past? What is the future? And what is breath? Like, breathing is actually the most compassionate action you can do. And it reminds us that we can't be separate. I literally take in oxygen, I process it, and I give it back. I give the information back to y'all, and y'all do the same with me.
Mm.
Literally. It's literally impossible for us connected. To not be connected.
Yeah.
I was about to say that it's literally impossible not to feel that level of connection with people that when you share that experience with them.
You don't even have to share it. You just have to.
Yeah.
Because I can say, oh, I'm not going to take anyone's breath. I'm going to lock myself into a room. And then I die.
Yeah.
COVID showed us that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you can, it doesn't matter what status you are,
yes.
what culture you are, what part of the planet you're on.
Mm.
We're all connected.
Yeah.
And loneliness is a killer.
Loneliness will kill you dead.
It is.
Yeah.
It's a killer.
Yeah.
It's, I hear you. That connection is really important. And to be even, I feel grateful just to be part of this conversation, like to feel connected to the three of you, to talk about the topic, not having experienced some of your sessions. I can't imagine how visceral that would be.
Yeah, it's you know what, Jim? We're in our head. We live in our head, and the culture, kind of this fear, tension culture, kind of, it's almost like you've got to do a lot of work to get out of your head and get back into your body. And why it's, just to set the context here, the other reason I'm really excited to have all of you here is that we've been working on this sort of purpose-led leadership journey, you know, for quite a few years now. And we work with people across all walks of life, and we coach, we run workshops, seminars, you know, yada, yada, all that kind of thing.
All the stuff.
But, you know, there's a context right now. Man, we're in fucking chaos. We have got tension, polarity. The world's going pretty cuckoo at the moment. And I think if you bring this back to where we are right now, it's a moment in time where we just need to help people find that beautiful, visceral, powerful, authentic, sincere voice so we can bring people along and not pull them apart. And I don't know what other tool a leader has other than how they turn up and how they give love, compassion, power and meaning to the world. And if you can't find that deep resonance, that beautiful part of your soul that your voice is connected to, then you're going to sound like everyone else. Or you're going to sound like the culture, or you're going to sound like the corporate, or you're going to sound like you're in your head. And so that's why this is such central work to leaders and change agents and community people right now is, dude, you're going to have to do some work here. And you're going to have to, and the work's going to be exciting. It might be challenging. It might be difficult. But this is part of what Jim and I refer to as the work, isn't it, Jim?
Without a doubt. I was just jotting that down. I think, as you said, Damien, you know, we work with a lot of individuals who lead organizations, and in the current context with everything that's just going on, not just in our own country but just across the globe, that these leaders have to turn up to their organizations and deal with complexity, and they have to deal with these issues, and because these issues are being talked about, this dialogue is happening within their realm, they need to be able to show understanding and empathy and compassion. If they can't show that for themselves, they won't be able to show that for their organizations at all.
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
I think that the challenge is that all the stories that get flown around the world, and they're all an illusion. Mm. Like, the ideas are all illusion, and the only thing that really exists is right now, right here, right now. And if you can keep reminding people that that's the space that we're looking at, that's where the leadership can be directed to, in that sense of like, okay, well, let me just check in and like evaluate what's happening with my body, because it, as human beings, it's reflective, and you pick it up. The mirror neurons pick it up. Just like you said, you haven't even done the class, but you can feel the work.
Without a doubt. Yeah, just in the last 20 minutes, just hearing you guys talk about it and just being in the room with you, it's really wonderful. And I think it's important also to acknowledge that it's important that men have these conversations with one another.
100%.
Right? Which is, I think that's exactly where Damien and I began, where we decided to just hit record on our conversations because, you know, we're not really surrounded by a plethora of men that are open to having vulnerable, compassionate conversations with one another. Yeah. We're not. I don't know about your life.
No, seriously, yeah.
And we acknowledge that, you know, how grateful we were to be able to be sitting down over a coffee and having those conversations, which is exactly where this podcast began.
It's amazing.
And I think to acknowledge that, the importance of anyone really.
But there's something that happens when we have opportunity to get together and reflect together and go, you too? Oh wow, I'm not alone. I'm not alone here.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we have inherited a culture that silos us into roles that really don't serve most of us, you know. And that's funny because I said that on our first day that we had, because we were all men, and I said, wow, this is interesting, class is all men.
Yeah,
something very special happens when we get together. I said that.
Yeah, you did, actually. I remember that clearly.
And then you said something, and I said, oh, we're going there, because we started doing really advanced stuff on the first day because of your check-in. We checked in. And you said, "Well, this is what I want. This is where. This is where." I said, and I turned to Fabio. I said, "I think we have to start with satsang." And Fabio's like, "Well, we're already in it, aren't we?"
That's where my question came earlier. You have a very willing student in Damien, probably much more willing than I, and very much more willing than the average Joe or Jane. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not surprised that that was your first experience with it.
Yeah, it just took it to a whole other place.
He's a very willing student.
Look, thanks, Jim. And I'm a willing student, but I think there's an energy force field that, and this is why I'm fascinated with these transformative spaces that we create for people, because that's the juice. That's where it's at. It's that role of the change agent. And we're all approaching it from a slightly different lens, but we end up at the same place. And so it's almost like walking through that room and walking into that space and that human connection between us all. You can't resist change. That's what the world needs more of.
It sure does. But those spaces are rare.
Yeah.
We don't walk into those spaces very often, at all. No. You know, we walk into meetings.
Mm-hmm. We walk into tension. We walk into trauma. We walk into fear. Right. We walk into gaslighting. We walk into it's institutionalized.
Yeah. My shortcut for that was meetings.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah. And it's interesting because I was just having a conversation with somebody about this today about billboards, like. Meetings becomes a billboard, but what does it actually mean? What does it actually mean when you say meeting? What does it mean to you? And I can tell you exactly what it means for me. That list of things I told you just before was what those spaces are for me. Mm. And then one of the things that I realized is that I wasn't safe in those spaces. I really wasn't safe in those spaces. And so, you know, the universe took care of me and said, "You need to get out of this space."
Yeah.
And I'm supposed to get my tenure and do da 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 da. And then I didn't get my tenure. And I was like, "Oh, I guess it wasn't supposed to be for me." Mm. And then once I left, I was free.
Yeah.
Happy.
Believe it. Yeah.
Breathing. Sitting at tables with people that I want to sit at a table with, not sitting at a table with racists and people bullying me because they felt insecure because I was bringing something they didn't understand. And like, why would I ever want to go back to another meeting? Mm. You know what I mean? So like, when you start to unpack it and look at the billboard, because what does a meeting actually mean for you? You know, and it's not even therapeutic. It's just inquiry.
Yes.
It's really just self inquiry for yourself, you know? And it's like, what am I calling this? You know? And for me, I breathe differently when I actually start to identify it and give myself the permission to actually say it. Mm. 'Cause that's the other thing. It's like when you live out loud and articulate what's happening in your body goes, "Oh my God, I'm free. I can do this.
Yeah.
I can do this. I can say this. That sound that comes out, that thing I want to say comes out, and I'm free." It frees itself because it doesn't suppress, because we get used to suppressing an emotion, because an emotion has a beginning, a middle, and an end. Yeah. And so when we get to the peak of the emotion, we get culturalized into suppress the emotion, and then we get a tension to hold that emotion. And so the tension is constantly holding back that emotion, and then we start having that trauma, and there's that meeting that we're going into. No one is actually dealing with their actual emotions.
There's the ego too.
Ego is a physical tension in the body that we identify as self. Mm-hmm. So then if we allow an emotion to fully have its full trajectory, go to the end, it just turns into something else. It turns into a different energy. Yeah. 'Cause emotion just wants to move. It wants to have motion.
Yeah.
It wants to have motion.
Yeah, that's really powerful.
It's energy in motion. Emotion. That's it. It's interesting though, saying how do we meet? How do we come together? And it feels, you know, I think you were saying this in the other podcast, a couple episodes ago, but about when you went to Greece.
Yeah.
And what was the Greek word you used?
Philoxenia.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just like, you know, opening up a space, have a coffee, sit down. And that's what we kind of did without the coffee. We just sat down without the stimulus. We just sat down in satsang and opened up a space to be.
And it's really wonderful.
And it's like, it's, you know, I think leaders, in order to create change, you have to
have a sense of open-heartedness. Like, where is the voice coming from?
Mm.
Is it coming from a concept, an idea? It's like, listen to my clever idea.
Yeah.
This is an idea, and here's a good new... Because those ideas will stimulate our frontal lobe cortex, but after a while, our head will get tired. The rest of the body will go, hey, what about me?
Yeah.
But when we begin to communicate from our hearts, when we begin to communicate from our organs, when we begin to communicate with a whole body experience, then our whole body comes along for the ride.
Mm-hmm.
And we feel things. You know, this is the great thing about Fitzmaurice voice work. It's not just about the voice. And Budhi says this all the time, which I love. Like, a voice class isn't just a voice class.
Mm.
It's... for us, it's an acting workshop. For us, it's also an experience of being human, is because the voice is the most intimate part of ourselves.
Mm.
You can hear from someone's vocal quality how they're feeling, where they're at. This is why the first thing we say to someone is, how are you? We don't say, did you get that meeting done today? Or which dot point are you off the list? That the first thing is we say, how are you? So we actually build to feel, to experience, to connect.
Yeah.
But for some reason, we approach these meetings with, here's an idea.
Yeah, that's right.
And we lose, where's the humanity? It's kind of out the door. And then how can we create change if we're not bringing the humanity into the room?
And then what will happen if you actually change meeting to gathering?
Ooh.
You know,
a corporate gathering.
Corporate gathering. it'll turn into another platitude, I can assure you. You know, Fabio, you said, how are you? When Fabio says, how are you? It's like, how are you? It's not, how are you? And looking away, looking at your watch, going, how are you? So hang on a sec, just got to text someone back.
Yeah,
sorry, man, what was that? Yeah. Oh, yeah, sorry, how are you?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it was a beautiful embodied, how are you? Fuck, that's, we don't do that.
Mm.
I know, Jim, you're great at it. Like, you know, how are you? No, actually, how are you?
Mm.
Now, if you're not here and you're somewhere else, you know, wherever you are will come out, won't it? And it will come out
but
through
that
voice.
That's the thing. You're always here.
Well, that's right.
You're always here. Yeah. You can never not be here.
Yep.
Yeah. Here we go.
We're going.
We are going down the rabbit hole. We are now entering the astroplane. Please fasten your seatbelts.
That's remarkable.
Well, look, okay, so science. If energy can't be destroyed or created, we're always here.
Yeah.
Yeah, does that make sense?
Yeah, we're always here.
Yep.
We actually are.
So if energy can't be destroyed or created and we're always here, that means we can never be born or die. So we were never born. We were always here. The body can be born and die as it does. It comes from the earth, goes back to the earth. But the awareness of the body deep inside, the self, is always here.
Yep.
So you're always here.
Hmm.
So no matter what your body decides that it where it wants to be, you are still here, which is why there's no problem.
Yeah.
There's no problem. And so when you really investigate, okay, there's no problem. What next? Wait and see. Just wait and see.
Yeah, it's a beautiful realization, Budhi, just to sort of get you just to understand that we are here. We are awareness. The body comes and goes. All the other stuff comes and goes. But ultimately, we're always here.
Yeah.
So any other games that we're playing is just another game, isn't it?
Yeah. The war that we see around us is the war that's happening inside of us.
James Baldwin said that.
That's my man.
Oh, look at that.
He's my hero.
Yeah.
Talk to us, Jim. Talk to us.
Same.
Yeah. He said that during the civil rights movement. I feel very emotional talking about James Baldwin.
Yeah, good. He's good. He's worth it.
He's they call him the blueprint for a reason. Because he's the blueprint for change, for making this world a better place. And you can see I feel very emotional about it.
Mm.
He was talking about white America in that context,
mm-hmm.
and how the anger, the racism that they would spit out was actually towards themselves.
100%.
Mm.
Well, I mean, and once again, it's a literal thing. Like, you literally can't feel hate unless you resonate hate in your body.
And you hate yourself.
You have to. That's the only way you can feel it. And so let's go one step deeper though. Let's go one step deeper. Through you, I know myself. Through you, I know myself. So if I'm hating you, I'm hating myself.
Yeah.
Because we are the same.
Yeah.
There's no separation.
Baldwin, man. He was the king.
Yeah, awesome. Jim, you had a really sort of emotive response. Talk to us about that. What was coming up for you?
I don't know what led me to James Baldwin. I can't really remember. I think it was reading John Lewis, the senator.
Mm-hmm.
But I've always been passionate about fighting oppression. My ancestors were independence fighters. They were in the mountains and they fought for Greece's independence 200 years ago.
Wow.
My father's side. My ancestors from my mother's side were refugees from Asia Minor. And they were basically Hellenic people kicked out of the Ottoman Empire and they forced to march across the border. So I've always been very passionate about learning what it takes to fight oppression,
mm-hmm.
which led me logically to the civil rights movement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And through John Lewis, I discovered James Baldwin many years ago. And during the pandemic, I thought, I remember reading The Fire Next Time.
Yeah, The Fire mm-hmm. Next Time, that's the one.
Which was three letters to his young son. Nephew.
Oh, his nephew, yes.
Yes, to his little nephew. And they were beautiful letters. They weren't written to a child, right?
Yeah.
And they were fucking angry letters, right? Mm. And they were very logical letters, common sense.
Yes.
That blew me away. It actually lit my heart up. And when you said, Fabio, earlier, if we speak from our hearts, I actually thought about that book. And then after reading The Fire Next Time, I literally went down to my local bookstore, which is where I buy every single book because I want to support independent booksellers. And I just bought pretty much everything he had written.
And
I've read it all. And I've read all his books.
I have another recommendation for you. Have you read any W.E.B. Du Bois?
No.
I recommend you read Souls of Black Folk, W.E.B. Du Bois.
Mm-hmm.
It's spelled Dubois, but we pronounce it Du Bois.
Yeah.
And there's I believe it's chapter 13, the story of John. And it's about an African-American John and a white John from the same southern town.
Yeah.
And it's...
I get it.
Brilliant. It's brilliant. And then I also recommend that you read Frederick Douglass. Frederick Douglass is the Accounts of a Slave, I think it's called.
I know that book, yeah. I know which one. I don't even know why I'm writing this down because we're fucking recording this.
Yeah. but that you have it in your notes so you can go back to it because there's a part where he talks about, and by the way, that Frederick Douglass is actually one of my ancestors, bizarrely enough. But there's a part where he talks about the first version of contemporary art in America from the slaves singing. And he said, well, the slave owners would talk about, well, they must be happy because they're singing. And he's like, every time I hear it, all I hear is the grief. And so that's where the gospel comes from. It's a way for you to release the grief out of your body. It's through song. And you saw how it has moved contemporarily through African-American culture and the music scene that we now sit back and enjoy. It comes from those deep roots of slavery, of the body wanting to be free.
Yeah, yeah. I could talk about this stuff forever. It changed my life. It set me on a trajectory that I would never have been on. It changed my life for the better, I should say. And it also helped me, gave me the permission and the language, the vocabulary to understand who I was mm-hmm. and who I am and my experience and the racism that I grew up with and the oppression that my people experienced, mm-hmm. which was multiple decades and decades of oppression in the Greek history and the Nazis, the Civil War, mm-hmm. World War I, population exchange, Holocaust, you name it. Just that's in the last, I've just reiterated the last 100 years, right?
Yeah.
That's just the last 100 years of Greek history just in that last few sentences. So it helped me understand that. So just going back to this conversation about stepping into spaces that give you permission to breathe and speak from your heart, like the way you said that, Baldwin gave me that. He created a space for me to step into. He gave me the vocabulary and also the courage to be me.
Yeah, I understand that.
Through his voice. I've watched his funeral on YouTube. If you haven't watched, if you want to see an amazing funeral, watch James Baldwin's funeral.
Yeah, wow.
African music, every preeminent civil rights activist is sitting there to honour him, presidents, you name it. It's amazing. The gentleman changed my life, and he sits at number one on my who are the 10 people you'd invite to dinner. Yeah.
Yeah. Make sure you have cigarettes.
Yeah. And a nice suit and a cocktail.
Yeah, you must. You know, it's one of those things that it's the tragic thing of those of black intellectuals during that time. There was a lot of substance abuse because there was no space to actually have a platform except in your own community.
I just can't begin to imagine 1940s openly gay African American man trying to fight the system.
Do you know who gets me as well? Like James Baldwin gets you. Mm. Bell Hooks changed my life.
Tell me about that.
So there's a book called We Real Cool that Bell Hooks wrote in 2004. And the beginning of the book starts out where she said that she's been witnessing the slaughter of black men in our country so much, and she's been waiting for the black male to stand up and speak up for themselves, but she's realized that they can't do that, so she was going to do it for us.
Wow.
She's amazing, y'all. Yeah. And it changed me forever.
Wow.
It's the first time I read something that literally spelled out exactly how I was feeling as a young black boy in America.
How important is that?
It was incredible.
Really? Our last episode, we interviewed my colleague and friend, Marita. But, you know, meeting people in our lives who actually open those doors that, and I equate this to what you said earlier about we have this tension, it just sits there. And when we sit in that tension, our body seizes up. We hold our breath. For decades, you said, mm-hmm. for decades.
Yeah.
I think
I know my father does.
Yeah.
Like my father's body, like it's so funny because I have this, you know, big, open, flamboyant body. But my father, when he was 19, he was a wrestler and he was destined for the Olympics.
Wow.
And some white boys drove by with a sawed off shotgun and shot his arm off.
Fuck.
And so his arm was hanging from a ligament. And so he can only bend his arm up to this point, like a 90-degree angle. He can't fully bend his arm. And when I was a little kid, he had the big scar, like that big scar from that. I used to always play with it. But like his life was forever altered in that moment, forever. And so he had a tension around his body that was dealing with incredible violence.
Wow.
And so the way that my father was able to hold himself together and be an intellectual and get his undergraduate and graduate degree from the University of Michigan in business, and conquer all these different, you know, hardships. And but like now he's got a permanent tension and a permanent sound in his voice because of all of, you know, 70 years of layering,
of,
you know, that has the palimpsests of survival, you know, that he has in his body. So that's the other reason why when we're doing the work that you can't put a value system on tension. It's just tension.
Mm.
You can't say
can't
like
it wrong.
It's like, well, we got to fix you. We have to, like, all the tension that we have in our body. We, like Fabio said, we needed it at some point in our lives. We believed that was the way that we were able to keep this organism alive, right? And so, and much of it is culturalized tension, you know. So yeah, that's what I was just thinking about that.
I'm so sorry, your father had to experience that. That's really awful.
It's crazy. What's America? Well, yeah. It's America, and he's, and, you know, and yeah. It's like, and we know that, you know, and it's like, and one of the things that I forgiveness, forgiveness is what it was. I just heard this, and I was like, oh, that's good. Forgiveness is releasing that you could ever change the past, that the past could be a different thing.
I heard something along
something
those
like
lines.
That, like
recently, actually,
like forgiveness is releasing to ever be able to change the past. Like the past happened.
Mm. Yes.
So, what are you gonna do?
Mm.
And that's where forgiveness lives. And so, like, and this is the great thing about children. You know, and I think about you and your relationship with your mom. Like as children, we wake up. I was pointing to Damien. We are the gifts for their growth and development because I was fabulous and young and gay and like outspoken. And my dad was like, what the fuck am I going to do with this kid? And I was like, and he was like, eat your peas. I don't eat peas. You're like, and you know,
I just pray for peace.
Yeah. Yeah. and so that was my father's learning because he had to deal with this child that was clearly his and outspoken. And I was like, I'm sorry, I can't hate white people. He's like, cause my father was very racist towards disliking white people for a very good reason, right? Mm. And so, like, my best friends would be like white, and he's like, "What are you doing with that white boy?" I said, "He's my friend." He's like, "It's like, Dad, you know." So that's where my father got to soften around that because of me, because I grew up in a very diverse community of poor kids, poor white kids, poor Asian kids, poor black kids, poor Indian kids. We were all poor kids, working class.
What led you both to this world of voice work and acting?
You want to go first?
Voice work and acting.
Well,
yeah, in that order.
Well, oh. or in alternate order, or just this world that you work in.
I remember when I was young. I was born in Italy, and I moved to Australia when I was about 8 years old.
Which part of Italy?
I was born in the north, near Como, in Merate, Lecco.
But his family's from?
Well, my family's from Sicilian.
Yeah, baby. Sicilian. All the way.
Okay. Right. Yeah, they're all, both of them are very Sicilian.
Was your family
Sicilian.
With you when you were born? Or how does that work, that your family's from Sicily?
My dad was born in Australia, yeah. but both my parents are of Sicilian heritage. Right. And then when they met, my grandparents lived in the north of Italy. Mm-hmm. So my mum and my dad...
Gotcha.
Went to the north, and that's where I was born with my brother. Yeah, and I remember just growing up and being curious about people. Mm. As a little kid, I was probably 3 or 4. I would walk up to strangers and go, "Hello, I am Pepeto.
Pepeto.
Pepeto Mota." That's how I called myself.
I can see it.
That's awesome.
And it's like, who are you? What do you do? I was just curious about people. And then whenever there was music in town, I'd kind of come center stage and just start bopping and dancing. And everyone was just like, what's this kid doing? So I guess I was a little clown in a way. I loved people. I was curious. And I remember one time I was watching Dr. Zhivago with my dad, and I was probably like 4 years old. And I watched the whole movie. It's just like a 6-hour film.
Yeah, it is.
I watched it from beginning, and I was like, why is he having an affair? What's going on there? I thought he was married. I was just curious. And at the end, I didn't know whether it was real or fake. And my dad was like, no, they're actors. It's all a movie. And I'm like, you mean I could just pretend to live this life?
Wow.
And he's like, yeah, that's a job. And the next day at school, he's like, I'm going to be an actor. I'm an actor. And that was my goal for a very long time. But then moving to Australia.
Oh my God, Fabio, we have similar origin stories.
Tell me your origin story.
This is what happens to us all the time.
We're going to continue from you moving to Australia. We're segueing.
Yes. Just because I have a very similar origin story. Like my parents got divorced when I was 5. My father was dating this girl at the University of Michigan where he was going to school, and she was in a play. And he took me to this play, and I was like, maybe like 6 years old. And we sat and watched this play, and I kept turning to my dad going, is that real? Is that real? And he's like, no, it's a play. They're actors. Like, no, but is it real? No, but they're playing actors. They're actors. And I was like, I want to do that. That's literally my story. Okay, continue.
Wow, so look good. At that. That's for synchronicity.
I mean, that's the same conversation I have with my father.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's so good.
This happens to us a lot, by the way.
Yeah.
So you came to Australia at what age, Fabi?
I was eight years old. And then it's in my mind, when being a young migrant, my parents couldn't speak English. They let go of, my mum was a teacher. My dad was a graphic designer. But when we moved here, they didn't have any qualifications and they had to start from scratch, basically. So, you know, it was financially difficult, and we were constantly reminded of our privilege. You know, it's like, you know, they worked really hard to send us to like private schools because they wanted the best for us. So when eventually there was a moment where I had to stop messing around and be a good student. And I think a part of my little
little curious person died there a little bit. And for a while, I wanted to be a good student so badly because I felt like my parents never really had the chance. I'm first gen, you know, like I'm technically first gen, like, you know, I have the privilege to be brought up in this country. I have to do something of myself. So eventually I went to law school for a little bit and studied law for about 3 years, but I kept going back to theater. I kept going back to doing courses and yeah, I was just like, this is what I want to, this is who I am and what I want to do. So I eventually moved to America. I went to New York and did some studying there. And I was very fortunate to meet a wonderful voice teacher, Ilse Pfeiffer. And she was a Fitzmaurice teacher. And in her workshops, it was quite an experience because I was giving myself back. I felt like I was just connecting more and more to who I was. I was allowing everything to move through me. It just felt like it was incredibly powerful work. And it wasn't just voice work. It was so much more than that. And eventually I fell in love with the work. I was taking her classes all the time. And then she's like, you should go study with Catherine. So I did a 5-day workshop with Catherine and I loved the work so much. And then Catherine was like, have you considering becoming a Fitzmaurice teacher? And my first impulse was like, oh, I don't know, because I'm an actor, you know, I don't want to teach voice. What's that? But then she was like, well, you know what? This work is so much more. This work is acting. This work is living. This work is changing. So eventually I got my certification. I was very blessed because in Melbourne, Buddy happened to be at the VCA and I had him as my mentor and, you know, he's also a clown teacher and mask work. So it was just such a privilege. And that's kind of the short story of...
Amazing.
Yeah.
Jim, can I tell you how, like, phenomenal these guys are? There was one night where we did opera. I think it was just prior to some mask work, and it was with two quite well-trained actors and, you know, theatre people. And Buddy and Fabio had me doing this Italian opera and I'm hearing these sounds going, where the fuck is that coming from?
Hold on, you were singing?
Italian opera.
Yes. Right,
okay. One night, it was like a Monday night, and that's where, like, talk about transformative change. I'm sitting there going, what the hell? People are walking up and down, like Ackland Street, you can see them looking up going, what's going on up here? How do we become part of that? It's like Monday night at 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
But that's the sort of, that's the beautiful, rich experience that you guys both create. And when we think about transformative experiences, spaces, human spaces, like how the hell do we not create more of this stuff? Because that's what the soul needs. And I recall, you know, 2 weeks into this program and then going back into the world, first few days, I'm like, whoa, you know, this is like ridiculous. Then I had this grief and I was like, fuck, I can feel myself shutting down. Like, no, don't shut down, don't lock down. And I had this little kid inside of me going, dude, like, it was actually quite a bit of grieving. And then I had to go, that's okay. It's just, it's bumpy how you reintegrate back into the world when you've had a rich transformative experience. It's always going to be a bit bumpy. It's a bit messy, but you know what to do. You know the space. You know what to come back to. The journaling, the meditation, the prayer, the quiet time in the morning. And every time I anchored myself in that kind of work, I came back, I maintained that balance, that openness, that beautiful, visceral, bodily openness. And the reason I talk about that to a lot of the people that are listening to this program is that is one of the most beautiful gifts you can give yourself, like to stay open in the world, to stay humble, to stay curious, to stay crazy and quirky. I mean, if you're not doing that, you are going to lock down. That tension, that motherfucker tension is going to come over the top of you and it's going to come out through your throat.
Normal is the graveyard.
Yeah. Wow. How's that, buddy? That's a big revelation, isn't it, for people? Normal is the graveyard.
Yeah.
Talk to us about that.
Well, it's just that it's death. Like, life moves. And Joseph Campbell says life is like a fantastic opera. It just hurts. And the more we suppress and try to be normal, the closer we're getting to the grave. The yogis say you are only as old as your back is flexible.
Yeah, so you're tired.
Tight.
Tight. And the other one you guys said also, nice.
Nice. Oh.
How good is nice? You know that fake smile that you and I didn't talk about?
We are in Melbourne, so we can talk about the disease of nice.
Tell us about that.
Well, I'll start with a song.
from Into the Woods.
You're so nice. You're not good. You're not bad. You're just nice. I'm not good. I'm not bad. I'm just right. I'm the witch. You're the world. So it's all about this niceness that happens. It's a mask. Mm. There's a difference between niceness and kindness. Kindness is living inside of what is true. Mm. Nice is me projecting what I think you need to hear that's against how I'm feeling.
What a fucking revelation that is.
And a version of myself that I like. That I like to project.
Yeah.
That makes me feel good.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah. But it also deals with that projection as well. Yeah. Because it's like, because the version of myself that I like can also live in kindness.
Yeah. But nice doesn't reconcile that.
Nice is a projection.
Nice is the projection.
Right.
That's right. Yeah.
It's like, and it's trapped, and it's usually trapped with the locked smile, the smiley face.
Yeah.
You know, if that's always, we've hit a nerve. That's Damien's nerve. But we'll get to that in 1 second, because actually your face is just so free now. It has so much life in it now. But one of the greatest ways you can see if someone is living in their niceness, and if they are living in a suppressed body, is if their face doesn't move outside having Botox. If their face doesn't move, is because they are suppressing something. You should have elasticity in your face. And so
expression.
Mm. Yeah. And so if someone's locked in a smile, that's actually an aggressive mask.
Yeah.
And because the jaw is one of the most aggressive centers that we have. So if I'm feeling quite aggressive, if I weren't socialized as a civilized human being, I would just go try to bite. Yeah. Like kids bite. They go, ar, right? And so instead of biting, we smile. Hmm. And then the lip corners lock all that tension in our neck, in our throat, in our chest, and it just works its way down. So if you see someone, and it happens, and this is the other thing, remember that it's neither good nor bad. It happens as a trigger for safety. Mm. So we think that smile, that nice smile, is disarming everyone. But actually, it's arming everyone. Mm-hmm. Because we as human beings, we know when somebody is in some shit. That's how we're designed. Mm. So if like all four of us got into a really heated argument and then someone outside walked in and we didn't want them to know that we were fighting, they'd feel the vibe. Mm. Even though we were smiling.
Yeah, of course.
They'd feel the vibe.
Yeah.
And many people live in that body all day long. So then you get into
their whole lives,
right? Mm-hmm. And so then you get into a situation where it's a new class, and you want to engage. And I'm just talking about you now, Damien. So Damien had this smile because he was excited. He was also very excited, but his excitement couldn't be fully experienced because it was locked in a smile from like, okay, I'm gonna let them know that I'm here, guys.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then as soon as you started releasing that smile, all this other stuff started coming. The color in your face, like your mouth, your jaw started freeing up. And I'm like, because I keep an eye on you. And it's free. Like I'm just watching you. Your face is different.
Yeah. Look, it was, I mean, just to give you a picture, my wife would watch me come into the room after the work and she'd laugh and she goes, who the hell's walk into that room? She'd come home and look, I don't want to bang on about my experience, but I think it's important that within the broader context of how we can liberate ourselves. And you don't know what you don't know. Yeah. Actually, no, I'm going to reframe that. You fucking know. Your body tells you.
Yeah.
It's called tension. It's called anxiety. Yeah. It's called stress.
Yeah.
You know what's going on, but
it's true.
You just somehow try and shovel that down to the back until it sort of comes up as whatever, like agitation. So we drink more, or we fucking work harder, or we buy more shit, or we fill our houses up with junk because we're trying to get away from what our body's telling us to be true, which is, dude, just I need something. I need to express. I need to be. I need to play. I need to dance. I need to yell. And I love that sort of when we spoke about yoga and you know, in yoga, I guess what you guys have taught me, you're almost meant to growl. You're not meant to look good. You're meant to look like, you know, you're meant to be. And however your body will be, will release.
Yeah.
And so that was a beautiful expression of what we learned, Jim. And I think it's so important to the wider world right now is like, where are these tools? Like, people don't have these tools.
No.
They don't even have close to these tools, which is also the opportunity for this beautiful work to get out into the world.
Yeah, and I think particularly with voice work, sometimes people want to do a voice workshop to fix something. They want quick fixes.
Yeah, yeah.
And what we're offering with Catherine's been offering and what we're offering is a process, is an experience, is a journey. And that's going to have lasting results. Versus the quick fix of, oh, just project your voice up here, make this sound, that's going to free the sound. Yeah, it'll free the sound for now, but our ability to breathe, our ability to go deeper into that awareness, that's a muscle that needs training, that needs practice. And, you know, I think a big part of the reason why I teach this work, and I'm sure Buddy can attest to the same, is so we can be in the work.
Yeah, it's true.
Because we love it so much. We love it so much, and that's why we teach it, because we can be in it and practice it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Catherine was like, the best teachers of the work are the ones that practice it.
Yeah. Damien and I are real students of leadership, and we explore it. You know, we work with it, you know, with people in leadership positions. I'm not talking about managers, different. Just, you know, senior leaders. And a lot of that world is, put it plainly, fucking vanilla.
Yeah.
It's status quo.
Yeah.
It's safe. It's not going to change the world at all. It's not going to move the needle.
See, that's the thing, is like, it's safe. It's like, people that say it's safe, it's actually not safe.
No, it isn't safe at all. That's right. What I mean by safe, it's comfortable for them.
Yeah.
You know, I work with a lot of impact organizations, I have in my career, and I've seen a lot of impact leaders who believe they're making change.
Yeah.
All they are doing is walking on a treadmill, moving to nowhere.
Yeah.
This kind of work is extraordinary in the sense because it's very personal to the individual, and that's what we need to create mass change.
Yeah.
You know, we need us to change as ourselves first before we think we can read a textbook and turn up and change our organizations and therefore, you know, have impact in the world.
Yeah, we need to interact and tell story and be in the room and breathe together and be humans again.
One of the things, and I've spoken to the two of you around, you know, Jim and I have also been really fascinated with this role of the change agent, this emerging young leader. Who is she? How does she turn up? You know, what's his story? How do they tell story? How do they find that beautiful, deep meaning coming through their body? And we do a lot of work with that, but I think there's one thing that's really excited me, which was this opportunity, you know, which I'm sure we're going to do some work together, which is actually creating spaces for people to tap into that resonant voice.
It's done. Consider it done.
Yeah. That love, fire, spirit, compassion, play, kid. So these leaders that we're helping are creating these spaces that are just mind-blowing.
The other thing is, it pushes us out of our lane, right? Like, and that's what Baldwin did for me.
Mm.
I listened to someone's voice from a completely different world than my own, and I felt enormous parallel and empathy and love, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this work does. It moves us out of our lane, out of the status quo, allows us to experience something that's completely not of our world, and yet this is where the magic is.
Yeah.
It makes us feel connected and loved and more of ourselves. Mm-hmm. Imagine that, something that is not of your world, not even in your fucking sphere.
Yeah.
That's how wonderful I think something like that would be.
I love that you say more of ourselves, and Damien knows where I'm going with this, because Damien and Fabio were there when the epiphany drop in of my PhD around the self and around presence and around awareness and what is this thing, and you know, these really bizarre documents that we have to create called PhDs, they always want meaning, 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 meaning. What do you mean by that? What do you mean by that? What do you mean by that? And my supervisor was on me around, what do you mean by presence? Like, the you know, people have been investigating presence, you know, for eons. And what's your definition of presence? What's your definition of presence? And I was like,
I know what it feels like. Yeah. I know what it feels like. Yeah.
You know, and that was like Roger Rabbit. I know what it feels like. And then I realized that because my work comes out of Bali, so I've been working with the Balinese and training with the Balinese and living with the Balinese awesome. For over 25 years. Wow. So I've compiled a way of training actors from an intersection of my African American culture, my Western training, and Balinese performing arts training that I call Balinese performing arts training that I learned from the Balinese as a yeah. Balinese dancer and artist working with the artist there. And so I began to feel this impactful presence inside of me that was being transmitted to me by the Balinese and being in the village and living with them and praying with them and climbing Mount Agung 17 times and just being in. So this is where Damien and I fall in the same bracket together. We go all the way, baby. You want me to climb the Mount Agung? Let's try 17 times. And then I found that in every culture outside of, in every language outside of Sanskrit, self is related to the ego. Mm. Self is related to myself separate from the others. Mm. But in Sanskrit, self is Brahma, the Atman, the soul. Brahma being the Almighty God. So when Lord Shiva says to his wife, through you, I know myself, it's a God speaking to another God saying, I know the God self because you're the God self and I'm the God self and I'm a self. Mm. It's the same as when I say myself and yourself. So that's the presence and awareness that I define as presence. It's the self recognizing itself.
Mm. It's a good one, isn't it? That we're completely connected and that's just how it is. And so when we have that connection, the choices I make, the how I behave, what comes out of my mouth, the words I choose. Dude, what? I'm not going to fuck myself up. Why would I do that? That's crazy. I'm just hurting myself.
Yeah. And you hurting yourself is hurting myself.
Yeah.
You know, it's rare, isn't it? To meet people who see you. You know, and I think they're the people who understand that,
mm-hmm.
what you've just described, that very present presence of self.
But the thing is, we all understand it. Mm. We all understand it because we are it. And then when we recognize it, it's because it already exists inside of us. But it's, like I said before, who you think you are doesn't exist. This is my teacher, Gangaji. Who you think you are doesn't exist. However, what you are is not separate from who you think you are. So do this. Put your left hand up. Who you think you are doesn't exist. Now put your right hand up. However, what you are, now put your hands together. It's not separate from who you think you are.
Mm. That's a great way to bring it up, to bring it together.
Yeah. It's all. Mm. So whatever you're experiencing is just right.
You have to sit within it.
That's you're never not here.
You're never not here.
As long as you're breathing.
But even if breathing meaning like as long as you're breathing in the body, you have this experience in this body. But like when the body's gone, you're still here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a big proponent of solitude and sitting in my uncomfortableness and on my own and just reflecting on it and almost bringing those parts of my identity and my world together.
What about with others?
I'm very good at that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But I know a lot of people who struggle with solitude. And I also know a lot of people who struggle removing that scaffold, removing that mask with others, actually bringing those two parts together. Mm. I think the status quo is to keep those two parts separate.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But the key is to check it out.
Mm.
The key is to have some inquiry. Mm. You know, it's like, that's why, you know, Fabi and I talk about we're facilitators. It's not like I'm a teacher teaching you anything.
Yeah.
I'm not teaching you something that you already know. I'm facilitating an opportunity for you to check it out.
Mm.
So whenever someone says, I'm feeling this, I'm feeling that, I think this and think that, okay, well, let's check it out. Is it true? Check it out.
Mm.
Check it out right now. Let's check it out right now.
Yeah, I like that.
Because I don't know. It's your body.
Mm.
But I'm happy to sit and check it out with you.
Yeah, I like that. And what's next? What's coming up for you guys? One of you.
Yeah, well, we're actually running a clown workshop at the start of the year.
And that we're inviting you both to come and join because if you want to see the self.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's do this.
Yeah, baby. Damien's in.
Tell us about the clown workshop.
Yeah, so it's a 2-week. We start on the 8th of January and it's 2-week intensive, similar to what you did with the Fitzmaurice and Mask. And really, clowning is really discovering that the unsocialized self, parts, the who you are with when you've never been told to say no.
Yeah,
yes.
It's the part of us that is free, uncensored, most raw, ferocious, vulnerable, alive, and we're there to hold space to let that little driver come out to play. and you know, I've been running some workshops with clowning with people who are corporates.
Mm.
And it's incredible to see because it's really all about connection and contact.
Yeah.
And humility.
Yeah. And presence and really being seen. Mm.
But you also have to remember that we're designed for clown. Mm. Clown is in every single culture on the planet. There's not one culture that does not have clown in its vernacular. Like clown exists, and it's also a primal god space. You know, we have Loki, we have Krishna, we have the coyote, so we have like the Native Americans. They misweave a loop in their tapestry because they say that's the place that God comes in, because a human being can never be perfect. Mm, yes. And the clowns remind us of how silly we are, and that we're not in control.
Dionysus.
Yeah. Dionysus. Yeah. Hello? It's everywhere. It's everywhere. And when we get an opportunity to do the work like how Fabi and I do it, it's once again, it's exciting because it's a co-teaching model. So it's oftentimes clown classes will have one teacher that's sitting in the space and then everyone's working with that one teacher. But you have two teachers in the space then it really becomes the commune of really going inside and talking to the little one inside and getting the little one out.
How amazing. And that's being held where?
At the Actors Guild.
St.
Kilda. Yeah.
How amazing. How many people do you have in each session?
No more than 12 because that's a sweet spot.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also,
that's where the party's
that's
at.
That's where the party's at. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and but we're also running our Mondays, which if you've done workshops with us before, you can come and join us. And it's just a 1-day intensive where we do satsang.
Stay fit. It's like stay fit.
Yeah, awesome.
It's a stay fit day. Yeah, it's awesome. Like Pilates for your soul.
That's right.
I love that. And one of you is traveling.
Right? I'm traveling. Yeah. So I also have a podcast, everyone. I'm with my best friend and co-artistic director, Adam Marple. We're called The Theater of Others. That's theater with a T-R-E. Find it on any podcast. And then we're going to Dubai for COP28. So we're...
For those of you who don't know, COP28 is the climate...
Summit. Yes. It's the climate summit that happens once a year, and it's where all the dignitaries around the world, there's the blue zone and the green zone. The blue zone is where, you know, the presidents and rulers are, and the green zone's for everyone. And we are performing in both the green zone and the blue zone. And what this has come out of is that they say that, you know, we know all the science, we know what's happening, and no one's doing anything. So the only way that we're actually going to get people to do anything is to get them emotional and empathetic around what's happening. So they asked us to create a piece. So we are performing in 7 different venues in Dubai at the summit the first 2 weeks of December. It's called Bright Lights Burning. You can find out more about it at the theaterofothers.com, theater with a T-R-E. Yeah. And just come listen to the podcast, because then you can really. Fabio's going to come on the podcast as well, because he hasn't even been on the podcast. Like
I've been enjoying it a lot.
Can you believe that? 3 years he hasn't been on the podcast.
That's amazing.
But he's been our number one fan. He's always like, I listen to it. I listen to it religiously. Awesome.
Well, you've got a couple of new listeners now. So.
Yes,
that's fantastic. I must say. It's I don't say this lightly, it's such an honor to sit in space with you, and I feel such a connection with the both of you.
Same.
I really do, and I just feel really grateful that we've met.
Yeah, same.
I really do. I am 100% sure that we will cross paths again, and very soon
once
I come back from Dubai.
Yeah.
Damien, thank you so much for introducing me to the boys. And I can't stress enough how wonderful it has been to meet you both. It really has. And I don't even think we've scratched the surface.
We were just literally just opening the door. Yeah.
Look, I've met these guys just over 4 weeks ago. And it feels like I've known you guys forever. And that says something. Like, that's the gift that the two of you have given us.
There are people that come into our lives that they open a door in our heart and in our mind, which is the job of leadership. That's the job of leadership. It's not to manage people. It's not to do admin. It's not to run a meeting. It's to unlock these doors in ourselves that unlock something in our hearts and in our minds. Because you can do that, you can do anything. And I feel the two of you have done that. And it's a very special connection. So thank you so much. It's really lovely.
Thank you. We need to collaborate. Let's collaborate.
Let's do it.
We will. Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Damien Carolla, and I've been playing in the human development and high performance space for a few decades now and run a coaching practice called Mentor Hub. I work with entrepreneurs, athletes, CEOs, and leaders on the topics of change and transformation, leadership, and culture. But what's central to my work is that we create safe, empowering, and inspiring spaces for people to realize their potential. And I work with leaders and organizations across a diverse range of sectors, from building, construction, and technology, through to retail and social enterprise. Lately, I've been collaborating with leaders and teams around the topics of mental resilience and agility. We use a lot of storytelling, open dialogue to help leaders and teams redefine what it means to build resilience and flexibility across a chaotic world. I believe in the power of the human condition and that each one of us is here to realize our full potential. And so Fearless Conversations is a series of dialogue sessions where we get to peel back the layers and really explore the things that matter most. It's a conversation between two good friends that care deeply about people and the worlds in which we live.
Hi, I'm Jim Antonopoulos. Actually, my name is Dimitri, but we'll get into that another time. I'm the Managing Director of Strategy and Transformation Consultancy, Tank. We're based in Melbourne, Australia. As one of Australia's earliest B Corp accredited businesses, we work across a number of impact areas and change and transformation programs, empowering young women, sustainable and affordable housing, financial literacy for underrepresented communities, accessible quality education, meaningful workplace cultures, and cultural diversity and inclusion being some of them. My team and I bring empathy and meaning to impact organizations. And we believe that every business and every leader can be good, ethical, and purpose-driven, or at least they should be. Most importantly, I'm a father of three amazing people, and I work tirelessly to leave the world in a better place for them. Our podcast continues thanks to your support. Listeners like you who have shared our podcast with your networks on LinkedIn and other social platforms have meant the world to us. It has motivated us to continue doing what we do. If you would like to support this podcast and keep it free of advertising forever, please head on over to marchfirst.com.au/podcast, where you can donate to support our show and share the link with your friends and network.